Okay, so given that we used Pell data, our analysis will also show a slightly increased rate in VBAC rates than what you would see in just using birth certificate data alone. So how are we doing compared to other countries? Well, looking at other European countries, we see that compared to all other countries, we have a higher VBAC rate, with several of the other countries having VBAC rates that are several times that of the US's VBAC rate. And to highlight a few, France has about a 4 times greater VBAC rate, Germany is 5 times greater, and Finland, Norway, and the Netherlands have a VBAC rate of over 50%, which is about greater than six times the VBAC rate of the US's. So there have been several medical as well as non-medical factors that have been documented to be associated with the use of VBAC. This includes clinical risks, such as maternal disease, like diabetes and hypertension, and there has been a particular concern with the risk of uterine rupture. Oops. And the shift in obstetric practices shaped by the changing guidelines in defining what is the safe and effective or appropriate use of VBAC, leading to also more strict hospital policies around the use of VBAC. And the interaction between the provider and the patient has also been documented in influencing the use of VBAC as well. Now, individual factors such as the mother's age and whether or not it's a multiple or a singleton birth, and maternal obesity has also been associated. And of our primary interest, race and ethnicity has also been documented. Now, looking at the breakdown of overall cesarean rates by race and ethnicity, overall, Black non-Hispanic women have had a higher overall cesarean rate, while Hispanic women have had a lower overall rate compared to white women over time. And despite the emerging evidence that VBAC is associated with fewer maternal and neonatal complications compared to repeat cesarean births, there has been differential rates in the method of delivery that continues to persist over time among various racial and ethnic groups. For example, 3 studies in California found that Black women had increased risk of cesarean delivery, and 2 also found that Asian Pacific Islander women, or API women, also had an increased risk. And in terms of VBAC rates, there hasn't been a whole lot of studies on racial ethnic disparities, but a large retrospective cohort study did find that Black non-Hispanic women and API women were more likely to attempt a VBAC. However, Black women were less likely than all the other women to have successful VBAC outcomes. And another study also found that across all racial groups, all of the women had similar rates of VBAC or trial of labor. However, after adjustment, Hispanic women and Black women had lower adjusted odds of VBAC success compared to Caucasian women. Now, current literature with respect to the likelihood of the use of VBAC by racial and ethnic group is varied, generally showing a lower VBAC rates among Black women and mixed findings for API and Hispanic women. So the causality cannot be inferred. However, the persistence of disparities further suggests that obstetrical decision making is very complex and multifactorial.
So I like coming to APHA to hear really passionate talks and to learn about new research and to see old friends. The favorite thing is watching my students present. This is the coolest thing you can have as an academic, trust me. So Hannah presented the nice overview stuff. I'm going to present the more technical pieces of this. Oops. Okay. So what's led to the change in VBAC rates across the country? The VBAC rate starts rising after there's an NIH consensus conference back in 1980 that's arguing for reductions in cesareans, and they identify VBAC as one of the potential solutions for that. And as you see, as you saw in those slides, the VBAC rate does start to go up through the early 90s. But by 1996, there's a spate of new studies that start coming out. And ACOG comes out with new practice guidelines in 1998, reversing their earlier call for it and putting some restrictions on it. They revise that again, as you'll see in a moment, in 1999. and revised it again slightly in 2004 and revised it again several months ago in 2010, which may lead to the new ones. Probably the most important one was the 1998-1999 shift. In 1998, the guidelines come out and they go through in the very, you know, we have level one evidence for this, level two evidence for this, but then at the end they come back and say VBAC should occur in hospitals where emergency backup is readily available. 9 months later, they issue new guidelines that are essentially exactly the same with the change of one word. Readily available becomes immediately available, which essentially starts to restrict VBACs to level three hospitals and changes the impact. And so last year, ICANN, the International Caesarean Awareness Network, does a survey of hospitals in which they contact 2,800 hospitals to determine VBAC policies. Roughly 30% had formal policies forbidding VBACs. Another 20% said they had no doctors on staff. And of course, there's numerous stories of women who have gone hundreds of miles to be able to exercise this option. This is a look at the research over time, and I just want to point out a couple of things because it took me forever to make the slide. This is VBAC rates by month. Speaking of no life, I actually have VBAC rates by month through this period. A couple things to note. There's a spate of studies by Bruce Flam in the late 80s, early 90s, and that encourages it. And you see the new VBAC guidelines start to come out from ACOG. I can use this to do that. And then there's a McMahon study in 1996 in the New England Journal of Medicine based on a study in Nova Scotia that finds higher rates of uterine rupture in the VBAC wing of the study versus the repeat cesarean wing. There's an editorial by Ben Sachs and Fred Frigoletto in the New England Journal of Medicine that's a sounding board. It's not a research study. It's a sounding board that raises concerns about the high VBAC rate and what it might be doing to uterine rupture. And those new ACOG guidelines come bracket that, a little before and a little after. But the one I have circled is the one I want to note. In 2001, July 5th, 2001, not that I keep focusing on this date, there's an article that comes out in the New England Journal of Medicine looking at induction and VBAC and uterine rupture. And it basically finds you shouldn't do inductions, especially with misoprostol. But there's an accompanying editorial that has a very clarion call against VBAC. And note the drop. It's a 3 percentage point drop in the national rate of vaginal birth after cesarean in 2 months. You couldn't move national rates that much on almost anything. I mean, if you work with data for a while, you realize these rates are powerful. There's hundreds of thousands of cases go into them, and there's a 3 percentage point drop in 2 months, and it continues. It goes to about 4.5 percentage points by the end of 2001, a profound impact. Why? Because our research is invariably mitigated. The study I'm about to show you is one of those. At the end, you say, for these mothers under these circumstances, controlling for these factors is a 0.43 higher rate of something. This is what Michael Green says in his editorial. He concludes it after a thorough discussion of the risks and benefits of attempting a vaginal delivery after cesarean section. A patient might ask, "But doctor, what's the safest thing for my baby?" Given the findings of Leiden Rochelle, which didn't talk about this issue specifically, my unequivocal answer is elective repeat cesarean. We never have unequivocal answers in research. And so here is a clarion call for something, and it gets picked up by the media, and it gets picked up by clinicians. Let me go back for a second. See the study at the end, the Landon study. That was Mark Landon and colleagues, probably the best study that's been done of VBAC. A very careful study, good measurement, at 12 or 13 hospitals pulling their data to do this. And what they find is the more nuanced kind of finding you would expect. That VBACs, there are higher rates of uterine rupture with VBACs. Of course there are. One wouldn't expect that. But it's very rare, and one would have to do 580 additional repeat cesareans to avoid one symptomatic uterine rupture. And so it's a very careful study. They talk about the very low 0.7% absolute risk of uterine rupture. And so it really tried to balance that and look at the profound impact it had on VBAC rates in the United States. Nothing. Not a whit of impact. Okay, so let me get to our study. This is a parallel to a study actually I presented at APHA last year, which was looking at racial disparities in primary cesareans. And here now we're just looking at mothers who had a prior cesarean and what their outcomes were. And the question is this: to what extent do racial ethnic disparities appear and persist in the use of VBACs? in light of this dramatic decline overall in VBAC rates in the United States and in Massachusetts, between, and we're looking at 1998 to 2007. This is the Pell database, which I have been working with for a decade, more than a decade. And I'm not going to go through all of this, but it links a number of data sets together, which gives us much more power to do the kinds of analysis. We can do more refined measures. We have longitudinal data, so we can follow women over time, the same women over time. And it allows us to do that. The red circled pieces are the ones that are used in this study. We're looking at birth certificate, hospital discharge, fetal death, hospital discharge for the mother and baby, and observational stays, emergency rooms, and overnight stays. The univariate analysis will give you some of the distributional data on it, but we do a logistic regression. And in the logistic regression, it's presenting unadjusted and adjusted odds ratios of having a VBAC for all mothers with a prior cesarean. Then we look at low-risk mothers, singleton, vertex, full gestation births, actually gestation 37 to 41 weeks births, who would presumably be approaching the decision about a VBAC with less constraint, right? They're lower risk. We did a sub-analysis of only level 3 hospitals where it would be open and available for mothers. And then we looked at higher use years, the latter part of this period, against early years. So this is some, I'm not going to go through each of the numbers, obviously. I highlighted a few things. Just in terms of the demographics of the mothers we're dealing with in Massachusetts, in terms of age, you see a much lower age profile for Hispanic mothers, not surprisingly. In terms of mothers who, if you're saying, of course they're parity two, this is only parity two mothers on that fourth line down. In other words, not 3, 4, 5 or higher. And you see a larger proportion of Asian Pacific Island mothers. But on the whole, I put the API mothers who never get next to the, it's always, if you do these studies, it's always white, black, Hispanic, and API, right? I put the API next to it because you notice they're actually pretty close to the white mothers. And I note that because you'll see some profound differences later in those populations. The biggest difference is, of course, in Massachusetts, it's not the same in every state, most of the Asian Pacific Islander mothers are foreign born. 93% of those mothers were foreign born. And then you see the variations in insurance for black and Hispanic mothers, much less likely to be on private insurance. A couple other things, gestational age greater than or equal to 37 weeks varies a little bit across the groups, not a lot. No labor and delivery complications. In other words, no breech birth, no fetal distress, none of the complications, no prolonged labor. Mothers who had none of those complications, black mothers were much less likely to be in that situation, perhaps not surprisingly. They were also, back for a second, they were also less likely to have had no medical risk. That's things like diabetes, hypertension, anemia, such as they approach birth. Black mothers are much more likely to in Massachusetts to give birth in level 3 hospitals. You think, oh, that's risk adjustment because they're being taken because they're higher. No, it's because they live in Boston. And Boston falls all over itself with level 3 hospitals. And so it's simply a function of that. 45% of all the blacks in the state of Massachusetts live in Boston. So it's demographic and geographic. It's not a risk. And you see the parallels. We also looked at percent of hospitals that had greater than 15% of the births attended by CNMs. And you see the variation. And again, the concentration with blacks corresponds to the high concentration in Boston. But we have enough data with the 10 years of data. We have 800,000 births to begin with. We had enough data that in our final models, we didn't use any of those. We used individual hospital. We were able to use individual hospitals that had at least 50 births to non-white mothers. This is the trend in VBAC rates in Massachusetts by the four race ethnicity categories we're looking at. And you see for Asian Pacific Islander mothers, consistently much higher VBAC rates than anybody else. That's not reflected in the national data, by the way, in the same way. So it's tricky if you try to project this beyond Massachusetts. But being from Massachusetts, we think everything's perfect in Massachusetts anyway. We would assume everyone would just want to project to what we do. You see lower rates for blacks and then the drop. Actually, they start with higher rates. When the rates for VBAC go up for the other groups, they don't go up for blacks. When the rates start going down, they go down as quickly for blacks as they do for everybody else. That's parallel, by the way, to what happened with primary cesareans. And then VBAC rates by these groups. For the entire period of 1998 to 2007, you see Asian Pacific Islander mothers had higher. they had 24%. Now, again, that's averaged over the entire period when those rates were declining. And you can see that in the early period when rates were highest, it was actually 42%, which is comparable to some of those European countries that Hannah presented earlier. When the drop comes, it comes as profoundly in among them as it does everybody else, roughly about a 60% drop in each of the groups you see from 1998 to 2007. So these are the variables in the adjusted model, and basically it's everything we could measure. And again, we have more opportunity to measure things than we can otherwise. The point about education, we had education and we essentially sensitivity tests. We put it in, we ran the model with and without it. The problem is our measure is proportion of mothers with certain levels of education over 25, so they could have completed their education. And when you use it in the model, you lose all those mothers less than 25. And so we've done it both ways. It actually didn't matter much. Actually, the difference has become a little stronger when education is in the model. But we have clinical and behavioral variables, and again, we have individual hospital as well as medical risks. So again, these are the actual measures of all of them. Let me read each one of them to you slowly. We just have them all, trust me. I'll gladly talk about this endlessly with someone if they want all the details on it. So here we go. Here's the unadjusted odds ratios and the adjusted odds ratios. This is for the entire period, 1998 to 2007. And this is the likelihood of a VBAC for all women with a prior cesarean. And for black mothers, it's a little bit higher, but not quite statistically significant in the unadjusted. Hispanic mothers, it's higher, and for Asian mothers, it's higher. When you throw in all of the variables, and I'll show you how we break it down in a moment, the differences with blacks goes down. The differences for Hispanics flips to a greater likelihood of a VBAC to a lesser likelihood of a VBAC, which again parallels what happens with primary cesareans. They have lower rates of primary cesareans. When you adjust, they actually have higher rates. They have higher risks for a primary cesarean. And Asian Pacific Islander mothers, after you adjust for everything, the differences actually become much more profound. This is how we did the model. Basically, what we start is the unadjusted, which parallels what you just saw in the previous slide. And we entered them sequentially, the variables sequentially. First, we did all the demographic variables. And that's where you see some of the flip that I was talking about among Hispanic mothers, where it goes from a higher likelihood to a lower likelihood. And as you can also see, almost all that growth in the adjusted odds ratios for Asian mothers comes with the adjustment for demographics. It gets a little bit, goes up and goes down after we add behavioral and maternal health variables. And then when we add everything, including the hospital variable, you find that Hispanic mothers have a lower likelihood of a VBAC, and Asian Pacific Islander mothers a much higher, 54% higher likelihood of a VBAC. This is looking at it by period, the earlier period and the later period. And I'll just note, in the case of the Asian Pacific Islander mothers, for the more recent period, 2005 to 2007, it now goes up to about an 88% greater likelihood of a VBAC compared to white mothers after adjusting for everything we could adjust for. So we find racial and ethnic disparities in the occurrence of VBAC, lower odds ratios for VBAC among black non-Hispanic and Hispanic mothers. For the black non-Hispanic mothers, the disparity is more profound among low-risk mothers than all mothers. It suggests the likelihood of non-clinical factors perhaps playing a bigger role, but though we can't document that, it certainly suggests that. For Asian mothers, they had significantly higher odds ratios of having a VBAC than white non-Hispanic women. The difference was greater among low-risk mothers and more pronounced in the more recent data period. Limitations, we don't have trial of labor as a measure on our birth certificate, regrettably. It's made us crazy for a long time. You can't sort out if the VBAC findings are related to differential rates of trials of labor or successive trials of labor. And other studies have shown differences across those two things, so we can't actually address that. And, you know, this is still vital statistics in hospital discharge data. I think it's a more powerful data set than most have, but it's still limited. It's not medical record data. And no one has talked to mothers about this in all of this. It's kind of a big point for me. Further study, I don't have a clue as to the reasons for this, to be honest. We don't have a clear finding that sort of jumps out. Actually, I thought after we adjusted with hospital, that would take care of it. I thought it was going to be hospital-based factors, and once we put hospitals in, that was going to be it. And then it would be in the New England Journal of Medicine. They don't even like me, and they would have published it because it would have been such a powerful finding. But it isn't. Hospital doesn't take care of it. The differences are still there. And of course, conducting exploratory qualitative studies, talking to mothers, and more importantly, listening to mothers about what their perspectives are on this, and talking and listening to clinicians about their perspectives on this. Where is it headed? There's promising things. There's some promising things going on around VBAC, partly because it can't get any worse. I mean, how much lower? It's like getting asymptotic when you're down to 7% for a VBAC rate. And so almost no place to go but up. The NICHD conference in March was very positive because they actually looked at the data and they looked at the research. And when you do that, it sort of changes the discussion around this. And then ACOG revised its guidelines, kind of. And it was a lot of good news in that they basically said women should be offered the option of a trial of labor. And at the end of it, they said, and they did it by evidence, and they said based on level one, level two evidence, we should be doing that. And then it came down to level three evidence, which is consensus opinion of docs, and they said, you know, we're not going to get rid of the immediately thing. We're still going to say immediately, which still limits it to essentially level three hospitals. So how that all plays out remains to be seen. Given the rapidity with which, you know, our vital statistics data comes out, I'll be talking about it in the 2015 APHA meeting by the time we have any clue as to what the effect of all of that is. But hopefully that, combined with greater activism, will make a change. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions? Now I have an assertion. You don't think you have an API provider who's willing to do VBACs in one of those hospitals? One provider could make a difference in that data. All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Questions? I'm going backwards.
We still don't have enough. The question was, Massachusetts is known for its large Native American population, and that's true. And even with that, we don't have enough cases to look at that. Once you take it down to women with a prior severe
How do I get out of here?
Another question.
Do you know?
What's the composition of the API?
I'm not going the right direction.
Laotians, Vietnamese, Cambodians, Indians, Chinese.
Thank you.
Now, there's actually widely varying rates exactly. We have that on another slide, but the numbers get kind of small when you do it sub-ethnically that way. And so I'm not sure, we couldn't do a formal analysis around it, but it's descriptive data.